Hello, everyone, and welcome back to episode 61 of the Sauvager and Cruddy Sports Podcast. If you're on a Wednesday this week, because Ryan had a busy early start to the week, so we had to push the recording off a little bit later than usual. But we're here, episode 61. If we're talking jersey numbers, Rick Nash for the Bruins, Craig Cunningham, Byron Bitts, a lot of interesting recent ones for the Bruins. For the Red Sox, they actually have a current number 61, Jack Lopez. I don't think Lopez is on the team anymore. He got sent back down, I believe. But, did play for the Red Sox not too long ago on a call-up. And Marcus Cannon for the Patriots. No one on the Celtics. I don't think there's a 62 either, so I don't know we'll have a Celtics next week. This is where it gets kind of rare to find numbers sometimes in the later numbers, like 60s and stuff. So, I don't know when we'll see a Celtic again. I think it's 63. But, yeah, we're here on a Wednesday. Before we get into studs and duds, sadly, we have some more news in the Patriots community. I'm not sure if they pronounce it differently, but I looked it up just to confirm. It's Kevin Falk. Kevin Falk, former Patriot. His 19-year-old daughter died 2 days ago. I haven't looked into, I don't know if they found an official cause for death, but another pretty bit of sad news. Bit of pretty sad news, English. Out of the Patriots community, sadly, we had David Patton pass away not too long ago in a motorcycle accident. Now we have the daughter of a pretty noteworthy former Patriot and Kevin Falk dying at just 19 years old. It's pretty crazy. It's just extremely young age to go. And we just wanted to give our well wishes to the Falk family and friends, anyone who knew Kevin, just really too young to die, and just very unfortunate thing to see this week. And yeah, we're just sending our best to Kevin Falk and his family and friends. But we do have studs and duds back for the first time in since the start of or the end of
Woohoo!
last season. So it's been a while, but this is always fun to have studs and duds every week. And of course, we start with week one against Miami. Sadly, a 17-16 loss. And it's quite a bit to talk about in this one, eh, Ryan?
Yeah, I'd say so. I was going to ask you that, before we jump into studs and duds, just if you had any overall, I mean, we're going to obviously break down the game like we usually do, but just any opening thoughts from the game, anybody that stood out, like I said, we'll jump into that more so in depth, but just your opening quick thoughts if you had any.
It's just the Mac Jones game for me. That's the biggest thing on everybody's minds, I think, going into this game, and he delivered. So,
I thought so. The amount
it
of
was
people.
just one other thing. I mixed up the score prediction. I said 17 to
Did you
16
hit it
Patriots
backwards?
last week, and yeah, it went the other way around. So that's unfortunate.
Well, like we talked about, and I texted you during the game, we brought up the point that, maybe this is, and obviously I brought up, took a step further and said maybe Quinn Nordin would be out there to kick the, what would be game-winning field goal, but obviously he did not play. They elevated Nick Folk, of course, but I, like I said, texted you that last drive. I'm like, this game has a Mac Jones, our prediction, or mainly your prediction that I added on to, the, last second, last minute type of Mac Jones drive. And just, again, the storyline, obviously Brady did it Thursday night to open up the season. How cool would it have been to maybe see Mac Jones do it in his first Patriots game? And I know a lot of people probably talk about that, but yeah, sadly not the way it ended. My main thing, and again, we'll, like I said, touch on this a little later, I am shocked at the amount of people right after the game I saw, because you said this is the Mac Jones game, the amount of people that I saw say, oh, the Patriots would have won that game if Cam Newton was your starting quarterback. Let's just get this out of the way now. I know we're a couple days late to the party here because my schedule and stuff like that. But no, they wouldn't have. You saw this exact same loss to Buffalo last season, a final drive of the game that obviously different circumstances, but a game-ending drive that ended in a fumble. Because you decided to run the football, and who was the head of that? Oh, Cam Newton. We'll talk about it. There's a couple of things I wanted to bring up with Mac Jones. Just his passing ability was kind of awe-inspiring. I didn't think he was going to be able to put some balls as well as he did in that game. There were a couple that stood out. Jumping off right now, just that little floater to James White on 3rd and 11. There's no way Cam Newton makes that throw.
Ever.
he's probably hitting the defender in the back of the ankles if he tries to do that. The throw earlier in the game where Jones rolled out, I think, to his right and hit Myers in stride on the run, Cam Newton's not making that throw. He's spiking that 4 feet in front of Jacoby Myers or throwing it in front of him where Myers has to dive for it. Yes, people, you know, if they listen to this, will say, well, Mac Jones missed that throw late in the game. Yeah, he Cam did, Newton, but Cam but Newton, Newton wouldn't have – no.
Most of the checkdowns that fucking Jones threw.
Absolutely not, no. You think he would have – I mean, obviously Jones didn't complete it, but the throw to that Jason McCourty, which would have been nice to see Jason McCourty make that play a couple times last year for the Patriots, break up. That ball is getting picked off by McCourty if Cam Newton's throwing it. Are you kidding me? Like, so Skip Bayless was one of them saying that, you know, the Patriots, you know, he didn't say that they obviously should have stuck with Cam Newton, but like kind of alluded to, you know, the Patriots with Mac Jones couldn't beat Tua Tagovailoa. Like,
yeah, that's just like deflecting to Cam Newton is just like an insane thing to do based off his performance last year. And this goes hand in hand, even with him not actually being on the team. Part of the reason why I think Cam, one of the few things Cam said right in his YouTube thing was that he'd be a distraction. He's not even on the team anymore, and he's a distraction now. And with the fans, like anytime Mac Jones struggles, everybody's like, "Oh, like it should be Cam Newton." That wouldn't have happened with Cam Newton. Yes, it would have.
It would have been worse.
Yeah. Like, what did you people watch last year? Must have been something different than me. It must be in an alternate. We must be in an alternate universe. Like. My God, like, he's not even on the team and he's still a distraction.
Yeah,
like,
it makes no sense.
Unbelievable, just, dude. Just, like, move on. Like, move on. I mean. The guy's cooked. He's done. Like, move on.
31 other teams seem to think that. I mean, again, yeah,
the Redskins
been brought up. Just
the Redskins.
Say, yep.
The football team.
Football team, yep.
They won't even bring him in.
Nope. They have an opening now.
They have, they
again,
have
they shot
coach.
It down. Yeah.
They have his former coach and they won't even sign him.
That's what I mean. It's telling enough as is that 31 of the teams have passed on, and the one team that we've talked about a couple times, and a lot of people have thought, just because of that reason, the connection with the head coach, Ron Rivera, and he twice now has shot it down in the span of, what, 2.5 weeks, that they like the guys they have, and they're not going to bring him in. Like you said, he's cooked, done, it's over with. I don't want to hear, and you bring up a great point, because I agree with you. Every little hiccup that Mac Jones has and every problem that he may have throughout the season, you're going to hear that, oh, you know, the Patriots are better off with Cam Newton. Because there's just delusional people out there that think this team would be better with Cam Newton. They wouldn't have been anywhere close in this game, I feel like, if Newton, like I said, just some of the throws Jones was able to make, there's no way in hell Cam Newton would make that. And even the touchdown throw to Nelson Agholor, that was a bullet from Mac. Like, I wouldn't put money on Cam making that throw. Like,
yeah, it's just pure delusion. It's pretty unbelievable. It's not really not unbelievable. It's pretty believable, but it's just annoying.
Who would have thought, you know, we have a whole new future to look for the Patriots, and we start off the show by, once again, losing our minds about Cam Newton and just because where we are right now.
Yeah. That's,
you mentioned it. It is a fun time to be back because we do have Studs and Duds coming up. If you're new here, which we're 61 episodes into the podcast and probably over 100 episodes just in general when it comes to talking sports, welcome, I guess, but maybe you should have jumped on, you know, a little sooner. Regardless, if you don't know what it is, obviously Studs and Duds, we will take three best players, three worst players we thought from the game before we jump into our game, kind of talk about the game, recap, stuff like that, the whole nine yards. So as we usually do, we'll start with the studs. I will start just because I have it up on the screen first. My number three stud from the game, no surprise if you've listened the last couple weeks how highly I've talked to this guy and how much I've anticipated seeing him out there. It's Matt Judon, had four tackles in the game, three solo, one assist, had one tackle for a loss. Of course, had the massive QB hit on Tua that led to the interception, where I did not expect Tua to sit right back up after he got hit as hard as it looked like Judon kind of crashed into him. I thought, you know, maybe Tua was going to come up a little lame, but to his credit, he jumped right back up after what looked like kind of a crushing hit from Judon. But you know, we talked about it. I brought up, you know, Zolak has called him a home wrecker at times. He looked like that. You know, he was everything as advertised and more, I thought, in game one. Also had a hit on Gaskin that dropped him in the backfield for a one-yard loss. So he seemed to be all over the field, looked good out there. You know, we maybe thought maybe some guys wouldn't jump to the spotlight, you know, play all that well in their first game, maybe some first-game jitters, but it didn't seem to be the case for Judon. He looked like the guy that, you know, they went out and obviously paid a lot of money to get.
Yeah, he was just awesome. Like, I didn't anticipate him doing a full-blown impression of Batista with the spear. That was awesome. Like, that was just, like, a highlight for me, for sure. For my number three stud, I kind of just went back and forth between Drew Donovan Noy and picked Kyle Van Noy. So I think they both, you know, were the two best, two of the best guys on defense. Van Noy had two tackles, one being an assist, a sack for 10 yards, a tackle for loss, and a QB hit. He just looks like he gave us a glimpse of what he had, you know, when he was here earlier a few years ago. And it was really nice to see. He's just a beast. So I'd put him as my number three stud. And it gives us some variety in the studs category. So
absolutely. I went back and forth as well. But I wanted to stick with the guy that I've been very high on, like I said. Right there with you, though, I thought Van Noy right out of the gate played like a guy that kind of had, you know, a fire lit under his ass just of all the stuff that happened with the Dolphins. And then I think they brought that up on the broadcast. You know, he said he was looking forward to, you know, playing against Miami because he thought basically they gave up on him. And just throughout the game, he looked like he was a guy playing with his hair on fire, another one that was all over the field. So absolutely, you know, Judon and Van Noy kind of 1A, 1B, it seemed like, when it comes to studs. No wrong answer there. Onto the dud side of things, kind of a discouraging one. I want to get your thoughts on this. I didn't think Dont'a Hightower had that great of a game. He played 42 snaps, which is 78% of the defensive snaps, had four tackles. Didn't really look like, you know, he was – you know, that much of a factor. I kind of forgot or didn't really notice he was out on the field at times. Apparently, I was listening to Greg Bedard yesterday on Flavor Maz. He said that Hightower left the game late with some sort of injury, which, again, he just wasn't that noticeable to me, so I didn't even know that. But just kind of nitpicking, I thought, you know, we talked a little bit about Hightower, you know, what he means for the defense coming back after being off a year last year with the COVID opt-out stuff. I thought maybe, you know, he'd come out kind of like Van Noy with maybe a little – but more of a fire under his ass, not for the same reasons, obviously, that Van Noy had playing against Miami, but just, you know, Hightower wanting to be back out there, you know, getting excited to be back on the field. And I'm not saying he didn't seem like he was, you know, happy to be out there or whatever, but just, you know, the expectations for what type of player we know he is. And then just to not really see him be in there on a lot of plays or, you know, make a big difference out there was kind of discouraging.
Yeah. I kind of felt the same way, just echoing what you said about Hightower, but, I mean, it's just first game back, I think. Hopefully it's not
take time. Yeah,
not a thing that's going to bleed into future weeks. I had a bit of a weird one. It just feels weird saying this for my number three dud, and it's Damian Harris. He had 23 carries for 100 yards, but I put him in here because it was like a weird week for duds. There wasn't anybody that got, like, cooked in coverage all day. Or anybody who, like, just absolutely sucked on the line. It was just mainly just the line in general, as we'll get to a little later. There wasn't anybody that stuck out too, like, black and white, for me at least. But, yeah, I put Harrison because of the fumble. I'm not, like, fully blaming him, you know. I'm not saying it was, like, the worst thing ever, but just the timing of it, you know, it's just unfortunate. I think the ball carriers need to be better with the ball. We saw Harris walking around, carrying around the ball, like all preseason, like keeping it with him all the time. And he fumbles late in the game. It's just, I don't know. It was a tough week for Dud. So I put him in there for that reason, but it's not like he had like a horrific game overall. He actually had a pretty good game, but the fumble at the end was a sour note.
Fumble will cost you. Yep. If you fumble to lose a game, and again, I'm with you. I'm not saying it was really solely his reason they lost the game, but it was a big reason. So when you fumble to kind of lose the game, you're going to find yourself on the duds list, as we'll see a little later on with mine as well, for a little bit of a spoiler alert. Back to the stud side of things, number two, might be surprising that I don't have it number one, but I thought there was a guy that kind of stood out a little bit more to me. I have Mac Jones as my number two stud, 29 for 39, 281 yards, one touchdown. Had that sack at the start of the game, which not a great start to Mac Jones' rookie career. That first play where he threw behind the line of scrimmage and would have been a fumble if Jonnu Smith didn't recover it, but kind of a little comical thing there just to see the rookie have a rookie moment. After that, he looked phenomenal. If you told me, you know, not knowing anything about football, that Mac Jones was a rookie quarterback playing that game, I would have never guessed that. Did finish the game with 102.6 passer rating, if people are interested in knowing that. Like I said, he had a bunch of good throws. You know, that third and one, like I mentioned, throwing on the run on the Patriots' second drive was pretty impressive. Had the throw to Myers, obviously, that would have been good if you let him a little more. The McCourty breakup, of course. The touchdown to Aguilar, you know, he I thought he stepped up. He kind of just stood in there and took a big hit. I think from a Landon Roberts was the guy that drilled him, but did that a couple times in the game. You know, he moved well in the pocket, I thought. Wasn't afraid to take a hit at times. You know, he talked about that after the game. We'll talk a little bit about his press or his post-game press conference after. But, you know, he said that himself. You know, there was some spots he could have been better in, you know, to avoid taking a big hit or not. But just the fact I thought that he was able to stand in there, you know, take those hits and wasn't, you know, afraid of the contact was pretty impressive to me. Obviously had the, like I said earlier, the 3rd-and-11 little floater pass to White that was perfectly thrown. And then had a play later on in the game. It was actually, I think, the final pass he had right before the Harris fumble. The throw he made to Jonnu Smith over the middle, that was a kind of a back shoulder throw that even the broadcast brought up was a good one because it kept Smith, it kept the ball away from the defender. So just, you know, Jones overall solid game. I think, you know, he kind of exceeded expectations in his first game, and there's a stat line that we'll get to later on that kind of showed he had a historic performance as well.
Yeah, Mac Jones is awesome. Like we alluded to earlier, it was just like the Mac Jones game. Everybody had their eyes on him. My number two stud, though, I had Nelson Agholor. I just, okay, you know, you can probably guess who my number one stud is now. But yeah, I had to put Mac Jones, my number one stud. I thought he was awesome, especially, you know, as the game went on. But Agholor definitely proved, at least for week one, to be his most reliable guy. Looked like they were on the same page pretty nicely. 5 receptions, 7 targets, 72 yards and a touchdown. He looked really good, and if he keeps that pace up, he's going to put up numbers like he did last year with the Raiders, where he had just almost 900 yards through the air, and like 8 touchdowns, I think it was. So yeah, I was really impressed with Agholor. I thought Jonnu Smith looked really good in the receiving core as well when he was targeted. Hunter Henry at times as well. It took a little longer for him to get going. But yeah, Nelson Agholor was awesome. He was, you know, making my prediction for the guy with the most catches look good so far. So if he keeps that up, maybe I'll nail that one.
Oh, absolutely. Of course, we'll have to wait and see on that. Still very early on. My number two dud, this one and number one I kind of cheated on, because usually when we do this, we're supposed to take only one person. But you said it was tough to find duds. I kind of grouped all these guys together. The whole offensive line, with maybe minus David Andrews, I thought was borderline horrendous at times in this game. Isaiah Wynn, Justin Heron, and Shaq Mason specifically, and that obviously pains me to say with Shaq Mason, because he's been so good in his Patriots career. And even Isaiah Wynn, you know, what he did last year coming on as a rookie and impressing everyone, just a bad start for him. You know, Wynn has the hold in the red zone early on that negates, I think it was a Harris 13-yard run he had. The Patriots drive stalls, and they had to settle for a field goal where they're already trailing in that to Miami after, you know, the Dolphins kind of walked down the field in the opening drive and scored there. Heron has a horrible holding penalty that negated a 33-yard strike to Kendrick Bourne. That was in the third quarter. Patriots were down at that time, 17-10. That drive ends in a field goal. Maybe if you keep that going, you know, Jones builds some more confidence that he can get into the end zone again. And then the Shaq Mason blindside block on Bourne was a killer as well. That drive ends in a field goal, 17-16, and that's where we end the game. So, tough day for the offensive line. I mean, outside of Damian Harris, you know, the running backs, White, Bolden, Stevenson, didn't do great. But, you know, at times the offensive line looked pretty good for Harris, opened up some holes, obviously. But three massive penalties are going to kill you. It's going to find you on the dud list. I don't know how else to you can justify it.
Yeah, especially when David Andrews is calling them out, like the line as a whole late. Mm-hmm. You know, that's never good when one of your captains is, you know, holding you accountable like that. Yeah, the one thing that pissed me off for the most was the penalty by Wynn that negated that run by Harris. He got him right to the 1 yard line, and it's just all wiped away from an avoidable penalty. And yeah, it just kind of screwed them over, took him away from a chance at 7. Just had to settle for 3. But yeah, now this is something that really needs to be fixed, just in general. But when you lose Trent Brown potentially for next week, he's questionable.
Big loss if that's the case.
Yeah, you're gonna need them to be better even more so. I thought Yusir Durant was solid when he was in there. Talking about the other lineman, he's a new guy. That was his, you know, Patriots regular season debut. They got him for a late pick from the Chiefs. Michael Onwenu, no real complaints with him. He buried someone at one point too. It's nice to see the fire from him. We'll talk about him a little bit later as it relates to Trent Brown and the Jets game with him potentially moving around the line. But yeah, David Andrews was solid too, but you know, as the captain, he's got to be the guy to you know, hold him accountable. So he did, which is nice.
I realized before you jump into your number two, or if you had anything else, I mixed up Isaiah Wynn and Michael Owen when you said his name. I think I said Wynn, you know, after last year coming in being a rookie and playing well. I meant Owen. Like I said, mixed him up with Owen. Anybody listening caught that and was like, this kid's an idiot for not knowing what he's talking about. I did. Let's not lose our minds over anything. So
yeah, and that mainly just encompasses my number two dud. We're on the same page there. So
mm-hmm. My number one stud, moving back to that, was your number two. I have Nelson Agholor. Just because, again, like Agholor, I feel like was kind of a question mark going into the season. You know, obviously got a decent payday with the Patriots. Maybe some people thought it was too much money. Maybe some people didn't. Regardless, then struggled with drops in training camp. You know, didn't get a lot of looks in the preseason because of an ankle injury. He was questionable going into this game with an ankle injury, I saw. But he played well, like you said, 5 catches, 7 targets, 72 yards. Obviously had the one Patriot touchdown of the day for Mac Jones. Looked solid. Didn't really look like he had an ankle injury throughout that game. I thought he moved well. Obviously built, it seemed a good connection with Jones early and often. And, you know, hopefully that can continue throughout the season. Because like you said, if you can get him on your prediction, like you have, that he's going to be the guy that leads the team in catches and builds on a strong year that he had last year with the Raiders, then that's signing could look like an absolute steal if he, you know, outperforms that contract.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. Mm-hmm. Like I alluded to a little earlier, Mac Jones is my number one stud. He got better as time went on. He just looked super comfortable like the whole time. It's nice to have a quarterback that's got like a similar style to Brady. The mechanics are very similar. They're both pocket passers. It's nice to have that in comparison to what we had to watch with dumbass last year. And yeah, I mean, he didn't like
so much hate for Cam Newton still.
He didn't
he's
like,
gone. He can't hurt us anymore. And
yeah, we just, still. I don't know. I just can't resist sometimes.
It's a bad time.
Mac Jones didn't like, shut the world down. Like he didn't like, he wasn't like a showstopper, but he was really just effective consistently until Josh McDaniels messed it up with a stupid ass play call.
Yeah, we'll talk about that too, because that was one point. The coaching as a whole, I wanted to get your thoughts on, because there were some head scratching moments, man. We had Josh McDaniels on the studs and duds and on the wrong side of it a couple times last year, and if we're gonna have to be doing this again, then it's not gonna be too good.
Yeah, but Mac Jones was just awesome. It's like really inspiring for the season. I've had my mixed thoughts on him in the past, but it comes back to the point again. Won't be the last time we say he's not Cam Newton. So, I mean, I'll take it. It was great. It was great to see him, you know, not really struggle too much at all for the most part.
Yeah. I mean, like I said before, the future's bright. I don't know how you can't be excited if you're still one of those people that wants, you know, or again, it's the person saying that the Patriots could have won the game with Cam Newton. Like, my other thing, too, I didn't even mention earlier, it's like, Mac Jones didn't do anything to lose that football game for you. It's not like he threw a horrible pick like Tua did, you know, getting killed by a linebacker and trying to throw it as you're getting hit. Like, we said it, Jones didn't really, other than the first play, if you even want to call it a pass attempt, other than that play, didn't look like a rookie out there. Didn't make really any sort of massive mistakes that, like I said, you could go back to and say, well, if he did this here, you know, maybe you could have won the game in this way. Like I said, I mentioned when Skip Bayless called out the Patriots for, you know, losing this game. Oh yeah, I'm right. I forgot Mac Jones was the one that fumbled it late in the game and not your running backs who gave the ball away 2 out of 4 times. Like, that's why it was so frustrating to me seeing all the people a decent amount of people turn on Mac Jones just early on, being like, the kid played out of his mind. I'm with you. Obviously, one touchdown is nothing to shout about, but, like, he wasn't horrible out there. He was, again, I'm going to get to the stat, though, later. Historically, one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL, in NFL history when it comes to his, you know, rookie debut.
Yeah. I'm liking it so far, man. I can't really think of much to complain about.
No.
For number one duds now.
Yeah, speaking of just complaining, you and I think we have the same. Oh, you fold into mine. Again, I cheated. I took the entire running back group because I'm with you. Obviously, Damian Harris did have a good game. You said it, 23 attempts and 100 rushes. But like I mentioned, when you have the fumble at the end of the game, which ultimately, again, I don't want to put it all on him, the loss, because there were some things the defense didn't do well. You know, the offense could have played better in the red zone. You could have cut down on the penalties. But that fumble is what will be remembered from this game. You lost the – like, I don't know if you feel the same way. Maybe Miami's defense could have stepped up a little bit better late. If he doesn't fumble that ball, I don't think the Miami's defense is stopping the Patriots. I'm 100% sure they're scoring just because Mac Jones looked phenomenal, specifically on that last drive. But that's a killer. Like, I don't care if, you know, he ran the ball 30 times and had 200 yards. That fumble is going to put you on the dud list. And then other than Harris, it was really nobody. You know, White didn't have that great of a game. He performed well in the passing game. We expect that from James White. But, you know, he really couldn't get anything going rushing. Had 4 attempts and 12 yards. Brandon Bolden, I said it when we did the roster predictions. I thought, you know, Bolden, he might make it because, you know, he's pretty versatile. But, you know, he's doesn't really give you a whole lot when it comes to running the football. Of course, they scratched J.J. Taylor for some reason. I would have rather seen Taylor out there, maybe give him a couple chances to see what he can do because he had such a good preseason. But Bolden rushes once for 5 yards. Stevenson, obviously, not what we wanted out of him, especially after the preseason he had. He has 1 rush for 2 yards. Did have a 9-yard catch, but you mentioned earlier, he had a costly fumble. Like, and then Jonnu Smith got involved too, I think, on an end around. He had 1 rush for 6 yards, but we're going to exclude him because he's not a running back, obviously. But just kind of a frustrating day because we talked about it in the offseason. You know, this is probably, and when we did the roster stuff, this is probably the deepest and best position group on the team. Maybe you can make the case for the offensive line, the linebacking core. We, you know, had that discussion. But in a lot of people's eyes, this is the position that the Patriots, you know, this is the strength of the team, it seems like. And they just didn't have a phenomenal showing, I feel like, right out of the gate.
Yeah, and I picked, you know, just building on that, I picked Stevenson for my number one dud because after the fumble, he kind of just, it seems like, lost the faith of the coaching staff.
Benched him completely, yeah. You saw him maybe once or twice the rest of the day.
Which then affected Damian Harris because, you know, some people seem to think, I think this at least factored in a slight bit. You know, it affected Harris because he had to, you know, do all the work pretty much himself in the running game. Mm-hmm. Maybe next week we just see more of Stevenson to redeem himself. Maybe they dress J.J. Taylor to have another.
I think they're going to go that way. I think they dress Taylor and I think they sit Stevenson.
You think they sit Stevenson?
I think so.
I think they just keep both dressed. But
I mean, if it was me, I would. If it was me, I would sit Bolden again because, like I just said, I would rather see Taylor out there. And it's a good point you brought up. I didn't even think of that, you know, that Harris now has to, you know, have the majority of the load because Stevenson's not running the ball a lot. You got to think if J.J. Taylor's in there, you know, he would take some pressure off of Harris. But like I said, they want to start Bolden for some reason. And this is obviously, I don't want to crap all over Brandon Bolden here because he's a nice player for what he is. But like, it's like I said, a good point that you bring up. Maybe if you have another guy in Taylor who you can maybe rely a little bit more on in the run game, you don't have to see Harris. And again, he had a good day, so you're going to give him the ball. It's obvious, but like you split it out evenly, maybe things, you know, happen different than they did.
Yeah, it's it was just awkward how it all went down after the Stevenson fumble. Just bring J.J. Taylor in, I think. This is what he's here for. He's here to change the pace, you know, when you need you know, to take the weight off of somebody for a little while or just, you know, have a scrappy little elusive running back coming and, you know, get in the mix every once in a while. That's what he's there for. So it would make sense to put him in the mix.
You would think so. I mean, I'm not going to say he's sole the reason you traded Sony Michel, but like you had to have traded Sony Michel for a reason. You had to have faith in guys like Stevenson and Taylor. And just like I said, not deciding to dress Taylor was just a little strange to me. I don't know why you wouldn't want a guy like that out there to, like I said, see if he can change the pace a little bit or move the needle for you.
Yeah, it was a little strange, but live and learn, I guess. That's all they can do.
That's true.
Have you ever wanted to start your own podcast? Well, Anchor FM might be just what you need to do so. It's a free podcast distribution platform with creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer if you wish to do so. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more other platforms. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. And it's everything you need to make a podcast all in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started right now.
So yeah, that'd pretty much wrap it up for studs and duds. Now, just some other notes, of course, anything that stood out from the Pats Dolphins game. Obviously, we talked about him a lot. Mac Jones had a very good game in his rookie debut. The stat I wanted to get to and kept alluding to came from Mark Daniels, Patriots beat writer for the Providence Journal. On Twitter, after Mac Jones's performance, he said, quote, "In NFL history, there have been 61 rookie quarterbacks to attempt at least 30 passes in their first career start. No one has ever completed 70% of their passes until tonight. Mac Jones completed 74% of his throws, which, according to at stats heads on Twitter, is the best mark for rookie quarterbacks." Then I found on Twitter, it was quote tweeted by Tanya Ray Fox of FS1. She had that only Blake Bortles had a better completion percentage. He completed 78% of his 37 pass attempts in the first start of week four in 2014. So, like I said, you know, keep harping on the future's bright with Mac Jones. You know, obviously, if you can put your name in NFL history right out of the gates, it's a pretty good start to your career, I'd say.
Yeah, definitely. It was pretty interesting to see that type of stat that, you know, nobody's gone better than 74%, but I guess that's just how it is. I didn't really expect to see a stat like that.
No. I saw the other thing, too, I wanted to bring up quickly is I saw a lot, some people were, I can't remember who the analyst was or whoever, somebody on Twitter, like a blue check mark, was complaining about just the amount of checkdowns that Mac Jones had.
Jimmy Ward.
Yeah, thank you.
He's a former player. He's, you know, I don't know what his deal is.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. I'm like, he was crap.
Like, if you ever watch the Patriots, like, if you see what Tom Brady does, like, Tom Brady, like, lives on checkdowns, pretty much.
Well, I think that, too, the point, I feel like he was more so leaning towards, you know, oh, that was Mac Jones's first read is to just dump it off to the running back. I don't know a lot about football, but I feel like that's the last option. Like, your last thing you're supposed to do is, if nothing's there, you check it down to a running back. Like, correct me if I'm wrong. Like, Mac Jones, I guarantee, wasn't going out there and saying, okay, I'm just going to throw to the running back 9 times out of 10. Like, if nobody's there, nobody's open downfield, like, that's the direction you're supposed to go in. So, to be pissed at that, I don't, like, again, if you're going to defend Cam Newton, that's all Cam Newton could do last year. So,
it's just, like, it's just efficient when you do it right. Like, there's no problem with it at all.
Yeah.
Like,
would we have liked to see him maybe air it out a little bit more? Yeah, maybe. But do you think they're going to do that in the kid's first game of his NFL career?
Yeah, he did that in the preseason to test it out. Like, he was doing that along the preseason. But, hey, he's just not going to do that in the first game of his preseason game of his career.
Yeah, I mean, and then,
people are just fucking dumb, man.
I don't get it. Like, I don't get the criticism one game into the season. I don't want to put out there, like, there's a lot of people crapping on Mac Jones because he's getting a ton of praise from a lot of people. But, like, just to scroll through Twitter and see the amount of people, like I said, that, you know, think that's a bad decision to keep the ball safe and, you know, go to reliable guys like James White. Like you mentioned it, that's a lot of what Brady did was that. So,
it's a lot of what he still does.
I mean, he's airing it out a little bit more in Tampa Bay because that's kind of that offensive style that they play down there. And obviously you can do that when you have guys like Godwin and Antonio Brown and why can't I think of the other receiver that I'm drawing a blank on? And Evans compared to what the Patriots have. But, like, it's just so stupid. The other thing with Mac Jones, too, I don't know if, like I said, I texted you during it when it happened. If you caught any of his post-game press conference, he put a lot of blame on himself, which I was kind of surprised with. You know, he was asked a couple questions about, you know, the team performance, you know, just kind of his thoughts on the game and everything, and was asked about the Damian Harris fumble. He complimented Harris's day. Obviously, when you run for 23 yards and 100 or 23 attempts and 100 yards, you're going to have a good day. But he kind of took the blame on the Harris fumble too. He, you know, said something along the lines, and I'm paraphrasing, that, you know, he himself could have put the Patriots in a better position, or maybe the fumble doesn't happen for Harris. I don't know if maybe he thought, you know, what that could have meant for Jones, if maybe he thought he could have moved the ball a little bit more efficiently downfield, and maybe they don't call a run play in that case, or maybe where he's coming from there. But just overall, you know, thought, obviously, kind of surprising he took a lot of the blame, because I wouldn't say he had the most terrible day on the offensive thing. I think there were more glaring problems than Mac Jones out there. But I said it when it happened. I'm like, man, this kid's already a Patriot robot. They already have him. You know, we need to be better as a team. You know, there is no I in team type of mentality, stuff like that. So I don't know if any of that stood out to you or anything interesting that you kind of took from that or his approach to the podium.
It's just about what I expected. I just, like, this is what I'm going to expect for every you know, like quarterback that isn't Cam Newton, because I think we all knew that Cam wasn't going to be like a long-term Patriot. Mm-hmm. So like, I wouldn't expect him to, you know, just completely fall into this mold. But the Mac Jones is like, he's the future. You know, he's going to be around, hopefully have a long career. Like Tom Brady, he was here for so long. Ideally, you want Mac Jones to be here for a while, be the quarterback of the future. He's going to fall into that mold. Like, he's a Belichick guy. He's a Saban guy. He's going to fall into that mold. So I'm not surprised he took the accountability that he probably didn't need to as much as he did. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's just the way. Like, Tom Brady did that a lot too. You know, when Tom Brady could have a fantastic game, he'd be like, yeah, there's still stuff we need to do better. Like, I could have been better here, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's just the way it is. So, yeah, Patriots robot.
Absolutely. I mean, it was comical at times too, because he was asked at one point about not wanting the football on his touchdown. And I think, again, he was like, you know, obviously it's a team. I'm like, man, you can't even, not that I have a problem with it, but I'm like, you can't even just like take that one little accomplishment that like it's your first NFL touchdown. And obviously he was excited for it and stuff, but I just found it kind of funny. I'm like, man, they asked him specifically about a question about, you know, what he did, and put it right back, you know, that we need to be better as a team. You know, that's not an important thing. I'm like, Belichick's all right, in like, his head. That's what I mean. It's like he's got an earpiece in, and Belichick's just pushing the buttons of, you know, the automatic response that he wants out of the kid. So
it's perfect, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, like you said, it's what we're used to, so it shouldn't come as so much of a surprise. But just listening to it, I'm like, Jesus Christ, this kid's what? 4 months into being here, 5 months into being here, if that, one game in, and he's already talking like Tom Brady did for 20 straight years. Like, it's kind of crazy.
Old habits are staying around,
I guess. Yeah, kind of diverting back into the olden days, which wouldn't be a terrible thing. Some other stuff I want to get your thoughts on before we jump into just the kind of the quick Jets preview, because it's obviously not a ton to preview just one week into the season. But if you had any other guys, obviously we talked about guys like Judon having a good game. Aguilar was obviously in our duds categories, as was Judon. Any other guys stand out to you? You know, the tight ends you mentioned, Henry got involved a little bit later. Smith was early on. I personally thought, you know, maybe with those two guys being out there, you could have went to them a little more. Maybe that wasn't the game plan, but I don't know. I would just like to have seen the tight ends get involved maybe a little bit earlier on. And then I thought, I don't know if you feel the same way, I thought Kendrick Bourne, yeah, he didn't, you know, show up on the stat sheet a ton. Had just one catch on three targets for 17 yards. I thought he looked pretty good out there. You know, he could have had a really good day, I thought, if not for penalties. Could have had two more catches for 50 yards, if not for the Heron and Mason penalties. Obviously had, I think it was the Heron penalty that he caught the ball on the left sideline and then kind of danced around, went upfield, and got a couple extra more yards after catch, and then it was negated. It might have been the Mason blocking penalty. But I thought he had a decent game. Obviously, like I said, didn't stand out in the stat sheet a lot. But anybody to you that, you know, kind of caught your eye, or maybe you thought played a little better than you expected them to?
I saw Godshaw a couple times, but nothing that, like, really stood out. He was in the mix, though. You know, I was, like, I thought he was Nick Thurman for some reason, because I think Nick Thurman wore like the same number as Godshaw in the preseason. Unless I'm
they had a couple totally guys mixing that up. Switch, yep.
So I thought it was him. I was like, man, I thought he was gone, but I was like, oh wait, it's Godshaw. The Bourne situation was unfortunate with the penalties. Jalen Mills had that one diving,
really nice.
So yeah, but we talked about Judon earlier. Smith was pretty solid overall. Henry got involved late. Aguilar was the best receiver, so overall pretty good.
Yeah, not too much to complain about. I mean, if we're – little nitpicking stuff. I mean, Mills had the – I don't know if it's the miscommunication, I think, early on with – I think it was Jonathan Jones on – I think Waddle dropped the ball or someone downfield. There was a little miscommunication, but just stuff that can get ironed out. But overall, you know, not a bad game for all the new guys. I didn't – correct me if I'm wrong, he may have been a healthy scratch, but Henry Anderson, who they got, I didn't see him out there at all.
I don't know what they did.
Which was kind of surprising. Yeah, I mean, you would have thought, I think he's, what we said, 6'7", or whatever he is, big dude out there. You would have thought maybe he could have got some time. But like I said, maybe he was, I didn't see it, maybe a healthy scratch. Maybe they just kept him on like special teams or something. We didn't see him at all.
That was one of the things I saw. I came over from the gym yesterday. My dad, was working from home, and he had Felger and Maz on the TV in the background. And that's one of the things Greg Bedard mentioned, that they like barely use Anderson. So
yeah, which is, like I said, a little surprising with, like I said, how big of a guy he is. And obviously you brought him in here thinking, you know, he could help your defense. So
I can't imagine he is. It's like a learning curve thing with him. He's been in the league for a while.
Yeah. But. And he's been in, he was not that it obviously matters, but you know, you got to think there's some familiarity there being in the AFC East with the Jets. So you got to think maybe they'll play him more. You got to think they'll play him this upcoming week, playing his old team. That you got to help think that'll help out with game planning for the Jets. Speaking of game planning and stuff like that, again, if you feel differently, feel free to chime in. But I thought there were some real instances in this game that, you know, Brian Flores outcoached Bill Belichick just completely. Flores, I think now is what, 2-1 against Belichick in his career against his former mentor. But I just don't understand why early on in the game, or just really throughout the game, you know, the Patriots couldn't stop the read option, you know, the slants over the middle. The Dolphins kind of ran that all game long, and the Patriots didn't really have an answer for it. Maybe a guy like Henry Anderson up the middle could have stopped that, or just a big presence out there. And then one of the more head-scratching things all day is on 3rd and 1 early in the game, I think it was the first half. End of the first half, right before they kicked the field goal to tie it. Jacoby Brissett, excuse me, trots onto the field. Tua comes off. Like, you, how do you not think that or know that's a QB sneak coming? And then obviously it happens, the drive extends, and obviously they hit a field goal to tie it in the first half. And then the same thing happened later on. The final drive of the game, the Patriots have Miami on a 3rd and 1, a chance to maybe get the ball back, maybe go on a game-winning drive, or hopefully that happens. And the same thing happens. Brissett comes out, QB sneak, game over. Like, this just the discrepancy between a guy like Brissett and Tua is just so different that me sitting on my couch, as soon as I saw Brissett come out there, go, that's a QB sneak coming. Like, stack up the middle, try to stop it. And obviously, they try to stop it, but, like, just – it was just a confusing day all around with some of the stuff. And I'll get into the McDaniel stuff in a minute, but I don't know if you had any other kind of plays that stood out to you or any thoughts on those two in particular.
For me, it was just the thing you just alluded to with the McDaniel's play calling on the final drive. Like, it's just – we talk about him so much with these like weird play calls every once in a while. Like this one, just like, I don't think anybody would disagree with this. Like, why are you running the ball when your quarterback is just dealing? Like, he was 9 of 11 as you have in the outline. Like, he's dealing. Like, didn't keep he was rolling be stopped, with it.
Yeah.
Like,
well, I didn't even
shades. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Like,
I didn't even realize it at first, and it was a friend of mine I work with, listens to the show, brought up a couple of times, Colby. We were working Monday night, and he brought it up. Brought up a really good point. He goes, I don't know why Josh McDaniels was calling that game at the end. Like, the Patriots were winning. Like, the final drive, they ran 9 plays, 6 rushes, 3 passes. Their rushing attempts went for 18 yards. Their passing attempts went for 24. Like, I feel like that's a stat line you see when you're up 3 at the end of the game. And like the Dolphins are doing, like, you're trying to kill the clock. You run it out, and that's the end of it. You mentioned it, the stat was in the outline. Jones goes 9 for 11 in the fourth quarter with 53 yards. Again, I mentioned it earlier. He didn't do anything to even make you say, ooh, that was kind of a shaky play. I don't know if I trust him late in the game throwing the football. Like, we might have to hand it off here. Let the kid sling it. Like, I don't know. I don't know if I feel like I would have, you know, accepted this loss more. God forbid Jones gets into the red zone late and he throws a pick and that's how it ends. Like, I feel like then you could be like, all right, well, you know, he's a rookie. He made a rookie mistake late in the ball game. You're going to have a learning curve like that. Shit happens. Harris fumbling the football on drive where, like we just said, Jones looked so good throwing it just the entire quarter. Like, that to me, I'm sitting there, I'm like, this is how you're going to lose the game, really? Like, the guy ran the football well all game. I get that. But just, I don't get why you don't trust Jones late in the game. Again, maybe it's the whole that he's a rookie. We'll build him up to, you know, trusting him more late in the game. But I'll just keep going back to it. At least to me, he didn't do anything in that game that makes you say, you know, we don't trust him to play and let him air it out deep and see what happens.
Yeah, it's strange.
It's a head scratcher. Like, 1 week into the season, we already have these type of questions. The other thing too, the obvious one, just for closing thoughts, obviously moving ahead to the, and this can kind of bleed into the Jets preview. Just obviously clean up the penalties and turnovers and convert in the red zone, you'll be fine. Like, the Patriots obviously had 8 penalties for 84 yards. Miami had 5 for 28. A lot of those penalties were just absolute drive killers and kind of unnecessary ones. Why is this an unnecessary roughness penalty? I didn't see, they didn't even show it on the broadcast, but they mentioned that Judon ended up on the Miami bench and they flagged him for, I think, unnecessary roughness, which again, didn't really say what he did. Brandon King had a holding penalty on a kickoff return for that was the one play Brandon Bolden really had and played well or did well, was his 23-yard kickoff return, which got brought back because Brandon King held a guy. Van Noy had a pretty bad neutral zone infraction that helped Miami score it late in the second half. We talked about the, you know, the win, the Heron and Mason penalties that killed drives. So an uncharacteristic game from the penalty standpoint from the Patriots. And then we mentioned it, protecting the football. You have four fumbles. You lost two of them. Red zone trips. You didn't do a whole lot. You had two field goals, one touchdown, and then the Harris fumble late. Like, very strange game. Not a very Patriot-like game. Greg Bedard talked about that yesterday on Flyover Maz. I found it kind of interesting. He brought up that point. You know, he said people told him that, you know, oh, the Patriots, you know, it's not a very Patriot-like game. And he said that, you know, they're not the Patriots anymore, meaning that you're not a team that, you know, I don't want to say that you can rely on to close out games. That was kind of talked about. Felger brought that point up, you know, that they're not the most dominant, like, you know, you're going to get a stop late, get the ball back and score type of thing. But, you know, something moving forward, you know, they can cut down on penalties. I have faith in them that they're not going to come out and, you know, make as many dumb penalties against the Jets that they did in this game. You know, they'll obviously, you listen to some of the coaches and the players, they know they made mistakes when it comes to holding on to the football. You said it earlier and I didn't see it, but you mentioned that Andrews, you know, kind of held the offensive line accountable for some bad play, which is good. Obviously you want a captain to not put your team on blast or put your guys on blast, but just bring that up that, you know, hey, we know we have to be better. And then we mentioned that, you know, Jones knows they have to play better and, you know, he has to be better. So I can't imagine they come out and play this Patriot or not like Patriot football that, you know, we've been so used to seeing.
Yeah. Well, they'll be back to normal. I have full faith against the Jets. It's a perfect, the Jets are, you know, slowly getting marginally better with time, I think. But you know, they lose Carl Lawson, who they signed in free agency. Now they lose Mekhi Becton in week one. It's just classic bad luck for the Jets. I think the Patriots will be able to handle them. So, yeah, the penalties were weird, though. I mean, I hope it's not going to be a consistent thing, but the penalties were a little unexpected to see them that frequently.
I just found the Van Noy one not funny, obviously, because you don't want to see a Patriot penalty that kind of that hurt you in the long run. But we mentioned it. We talked about it. You know, Van Noy seemed like he was playing just out of his mind that whole game. Maybe emotions got the better of him on that type of play with the neutral zone infraction. Just kind of reel it in there a little bit, big fella. But, yeah, other than that, I mean, it is what it is. Again, we're very confident. We think that, you know, they can iron these things out and be fine moving forward to take on the Jets, who are 0-1 along with the Patriots. Kind of funny to see the Miami Dolphins as the lone 1-0 team in the division moving forward. But the Jets, they come in off a week one loss at the hands of the Panthers, 19-14. It is a battle of the rookie quarterbacks with Mac Jones and Zach Wilson. The Jets, like I said, they averaged 14 points per game, just one game in. I don't know, did you see anything in that Jets game? I don't know how much highlights-wise, if you caught any of it, because like we talked about a little bit before we jumped on here, you know, I'm not clamoring other than for fantasy football value to tune into the Jets and Panthers highlights and watch into that game. But was there anything that you caught, anything that you don't maybe saw in passing that stood out to you about the Jets moving into this game?
No, I mean, Zach Wilson got better as the game went on. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, Corey Davis was really good. That was the biggest thing. I'm looking for the Patriots to shut down. I assume J.C. Jackson will have a lot of Corey Davis on his plate. But Corey Davis looked really good. Mm-hmm. One of their free agent pickups this offseason. But, yeah, they're a little hampered by losing Mekhi Becton now. One of the better young linemen in the league. It's the first Mac versus Zach matchup of their careers. I'm going to make a Photoshop on Snapchat like I do every once in a while of Mac Jones and Zach Wilson on the Jimmy Timmy Power Hour thing. instead of Jimmy Timmy, it's Mac and Zach. But yeah, I think Zach Wilson got better as the game went on, got more comfortable. I was on Red Zone though, so it's not like I watched the whole thing start to finish. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they're still the Jets. I mean, they're a very beatable team.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's not a ton just looking at kind of the stats and how things went down against Carolina. Like you said, I didn't see a ton about Wilson. You know, people weren't, you know, clamoring over him, I feel like, as they may have been guys like Trevor Lawrence. And obviously, Mac Jones had a good game. You know, Wilson had a decent game. He goes 20 for 37, did have two touchdowns, one pick. The big thing that I noticed right out of the gate is the 6 sacks. And like you said, now with Becton being out, obviously a huge, huge loss for the Jets and something you hope the Patriots, who put a decent amount of pressure on Tua. There were times where I didn't think they rushed him a ton, but like we mentioned, you know, Judon had some nice pressure. Uche, we didn't even mention. Good to see him just barrel over a guy for a sack. That was good to see, you know, Uche kind of live up to the prowess we thought he was going to have last season when he got onto the field, you know, showed at times. But you got to think, if they can have the Panthers can get to the Jets for 6 sacks last week, now they're playing without one of their better offensive linemen. You got to think the Patriots, guys like Van Noy, Judon, maybe even Chase Winovich, if he gets in there, he got in a couple times in the Miami game, was into his face a little bit. Maybe you let those guys run free and, you know, maybe you can pick up a half a dozen more sacks against Wilson.
Yeah, hopefully. I think they can build on what kind of got going last week and take advantage, hopefully, of a bit of a hampered offensive line for the Jets. You know, they've still got, you know, a good young tackle that's probably going to have more pressure on him this week in Elijah Vera Tucker. But their line's still beatable without Mekhi Becton, who's already ruled out. So we'll see what happens. The Patriots got some questions on the line as well, with Trent Brown being questionable. There's some talk of whether Michael Owenu is going to move to right tackle. I'm almost positive he played there last year. I don't remember, like, specific games.
He moved
games,
around a lot, yeah.
But he moved around a lot. Like, I find it hard to believe he didn't play a little bit of right tackle, but hasn't taken any recently, per, you know, him talking to the media today. So, I mean, I think that's probably your best outcome. Mm-hmm. I think, ideally, if Trent Brown doesn't play, you're running with Isaiah Wynn at left tackle. I'd say you put Ted Karras at left guard.
I forgot they had Ted Karras for a second. I'm not going to lie.
I think Karras
I would go with that guard. Yeah, absolutely.
Durant is a tackle. I don't know if he has any guard flexibility. If they really wanted to, like, to get another guard, they could bring Will Sherman off the practice squad, but I don't know if that's in the cards, or Alex Redmond. Then Andrews at center and Shaq Mason at right guard and Onwenu at right tackle. I think that's the ideal line you run out if Trent Brown doesn't play. Mm-hmm. But back to the Jets real quick. You know, as I've done in years past, just like about some standouts. I think if there's anybody to watch out for in their defense, Marcus May is one of them. He's a decent safety. CJ Mosley's healthy this year, so he's worth noting. Adrian Colbert's a former Patriot. Got picked up on their practice squad, promoted now. Fatukasi, I don't know a lot about him, but it seems to think, you know, just seeing stuff on Twitter and stuff, that he's thought of fairly highly. So, you know, maybe he's got to watch out. He's a defensive tackle. Quinnen Williams has been pretty good in his young career so far. And that's really it. There's not a whole lot otherwise to really get too worked up about on defense for the Jets. So
no, I mean,
I think there's, like I said, I've said like 3 times already. It's a winnable matchup for the Patriots this week, as usual, against the Jets. So
that's what I mean. I mean, I feel like for the first time, maybe in a long time, with the Jets, I feel like the biggest thing on offense you have to worry about is your quarterback. Like, Wilson had a solid game, but other than that, like, their running backs didn't do anything against the Panthers. I don't know how good their run defense is. I mean, it's got to be, I have to assume, pretty good that they only allowed 45 rushing yards. I mean, they got guys, Tevin Coleman's a decent back. Michael Carter's supposed to be one of the more promising rookies from what I've heard in out of the draft, but, like, they didn't look like they ran the ball all that well. You mentioned it, Corey Davis, their big offseason addition on offense, or one of their bigger guys. He had a solid game, 97 yards, had 5 catches. Braxton Berrios, just a guy to watch out for, because I feel like he's had some decent moments against his former team. He had 5 catches on 7 targets for 51 yards. But other than that, just kind of a whole lot of, you know, Denzel Mims had 1 catch for 40 yards. I feel like the Patriots can kind of, they're not obviously known for giving up the big explosive play like that. So, like, there's not a ton there. I think obviously Zach Wilson's just a guy to keep an eye on. I didn't watch a ton of his stuff. How mobile of a guy is he? Is that something to watch out for?
He's pretty mobile.
Okay, because he didn't get involved in the running game at all against Carolina, at least according to the ESPN stat sheet. So
he had like the Mahomes comparisons too in college. So people always go to that. So
maybe that's something that Jets may try to work into their offense in week two. I don't want to say it's a filling out process like I did for last week. We did score predictions, which we can get into in a second. But again, I mean, it's two rookie quarterbacks. You know, there's not a ton of knowledge, and the Jets obviously don't know a ton about Jones. The Pats don't know a ton about Zach Wilson. So maybe for the second straight week, you have a low scoring, you know, filling out type of thing. I think the Patriots playing the Jets, I think they'll let Jones loose a little bit. I hope to, at least just kind of building off of, you know, what we expect to see, what we hope to see in this game. I hope they don't take the same approach that I just harped on, that, you know, that fourth quarter approach of just run the football a ton. If it works against the Jets, because they gave up, what, 111 yards on the ground last week. Again, that was some Christian McCaffrey, a backfield led by him. So maybe a little different story with a backfield led by Damian Harris. But I just like to see him maybe trust Jones a little bit more, let him throw the football, see if you can get, you know, the Jets to look like the Jets out there, be running around with their heads cut off, and see if you can get something going that way.
Yeah, that's what you got to hope for the Jets to be the Jets. And, you know, you play them a lot, so you know how to
you kind of know those, yeah, exactly, things.
But it is a little different this year. I mean, they got a new some changes to the staff with Robert Saleh and
forgot.
So we'll see, but so that's a little bit where the obscurity lies, if there is any, for, you know, game planning for the Jets. But you know, it's Belichick. I'm sure he's doing his homework pretty thoroughly. So
absolutely. The other thing too, just to finish it up before we do the roster the score predictions. Looking at the injury reports as we usually do before the game, neither the Patriots or the Jets official websites have injury reports out there for week two. They're still on week one, so I had to get these from ESPN. For the Patriots, linebacker Ronnie Perkins and offensive tackle Yadni Kajus are both questionable. Didn't say what the injuries were, so that's obviously always helpful. Thank you, ESPN, for that. You mentioned it. Trent Brown is dealing with a calf injury after week one. He is questionable. And like I mentioned, Greg Bedard said yesterday, Dante Hightower may have been nicked up at the end of that game. He's not on any sort of injury reports, but maybe a name that might pop up later on in the week. For the Jets, they're a little bit more filled out. Running backs LaMichael Perine and wide receivers Keelan Cole are both questionable. Again, ESPN did not say what their injuries were. Linebacker Jamien Sherwood is out with an ankle injury. Punter Braden Mann was just placed on IR with a knee injury. Jamison Crowder is on the COVID reserve injury list. He has already been ruled out according to the ESPN stuff. You just mentioned it. Mekhi Becton is out with a knee injury. He's on IR. Blake Cashman, linebacker, is out with a hamstring. He was placed on IR the other day, as was safety LaMarcus Joyner. He's dealing with an elbow injury. So the Jets, very early in the season, already quite banged up. So maybe the Patriots can take advantage of that. Obviously, you never want to see injuries on guys, no matter what team they play on. But like I mentioned, you know, Becton being out, that obviously helps the Patriots a little bit. Jamison Crowder, if he can't go, he's a guy that, you know, has put up some numbers a couple times, you know, and throughout his career. So maybe one less guy that you'll have to worry about, and maybe just, you know, strictly go after guys like Corey Davis and even Braxton Berrios if you put him up into that category. Because like I said, he's had some solid performances against his former team, so maybe something to keep an eye on there. But other than that, not a ton, like I said, that we know about right now when it comes to injuries. Hopefully those will be out a little bit later on in the week, and maybe we'll get a clearer picture of who's in and who's not for the Jets game.
Yep. I think all we got left is score predictions. Maybe, yeah. Hopefully I don't flip my score prediction this week like I did last week, because that'd be pretty ugly.
That would be, yeah. We can do score predictions. Like you said, that is the last thing to get to. Again, if people care to know, ESPN, the matchup predicted they have, has the Patriots with a 65% win probability. It went up from 64.8. So ESPN, very high on the Patriots going into week two, as are we. I have the Patriots. Again, I think it's going to be kind of a nitty gritty type of game. I have the Patriots winning 22-13 over the Jets. I think Jones gets into the end zone again. Like I said, hopefully they let him air it out a little bit more. Maybe we see more of a more of an aerial attack in this game than you saw in week one against the Dolphins. Your game is way more exciting, though. Before you get, I don't know if I was right in front of you, if you're going to say anything to cut you off, but
oh,
you
no.
have a much more exciting and interesting score prediction for you.
Yeah, I'm going 31-17, which is why I said, you know, if it was on the flip side,
that would be bad.
It would be bad to lose by two touchdowns to the
panic
Jets.
Panic mode if that happens.
Not just let up two touchdowns, letting up 31 points to the Jets would be horrific.
Would not be
But yeah, I think the Patriots are going to put up some points here. I think they're going to be pissed off. I think that loss was, you know, I think they, you know, could have won that, and they know it. I think, you know, they have a lesser opponent this week. They're going to, you know, take out some frustrations and set the record straight. You know, this is a team that can definitely compete this year. I think, you know, around 10, 11 wins isn't the most unreasonable thing. And, you know, they're going to have to start, you know, beating opponents they can beat like the Jets to, you know, get the ball rolling and get Mac Jones' first regular season win.
You know, that would be nice to see.
We thought it was going to happen last week, but, you know, there's always second chances. So
much for our 3-0 heading into week four against Tampa Bay prediction.
Yeah,
that was ruined right out of the gate.
But, yeah, man, my big hope is not flipping the score prediction. So that'd be,
yeah, that would not be
ideal.
Good.
Please.
It would be very bad to listen to Boston Sports Talk Radio if –
oh, God. People would be calling
it
a trade.
To the Jets.
People would be calling it a trade Mac Jones. Like,
they'd be begging for Cam Newton to come back here.
Yeah.
Another quarterback. That wouldn't be good. I know it's not on the outline, so apologies to put you on the spot. But as we wrap it up here, any other, you know, closing thoughts from the first week of football? Any games, any players that stood out to you? Any, you know, fantasy football takes you want to get off your chest before we get out of here?
I mean,
how did you do in week one of fantasy football? I'll ask because I did not do great in both my leagues. I am currently 0-1.
That's hot and cold.
Yeah, thank you, Zeke Elliott and Brandon Ayuk, putting up a big fat goose egg against the Lions for some reason, which was my most head-scratching thing. How do you put up 41 points as a team and not target one of your better receivers all day? But regardless, hopefully we can bounce back in week two. I got some matchups that might be in my favor, hopefully, so we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, my week went all right fantasy wise. One of my dynasty league, which is, you know, we got money involved in that this year, so it's a good start. Put up 163 points, a pretty big week. Even with Cortland Sutton struggling, but lost by like 15 in my other league and ESPN. Even though I had Christian McCaffrey, who did not have a single touchdown, but managed to put up 27.7 points.
That'll work.
He's just absurd. So. Yeah, decent week in fantasy, I guess. You know, a little hot and cold week. For the league, I mean, it's a good week to be a rookie receiver.
Absolutely.
Jalen Waddle got in the end zone. Devontae Smith on his first catch. Jamar Chase kind of shut up the doubters with the whole, like, the differences in the balls.
I was going to say, was he the one that was not able to see the football? Because, yeah, that stupid comment.
Yeah, but he put up 100 bomb in his first game. You know, not too surprising, but, you know, it's nice. I think it's like I saw something like this is the first time like three rookie receivers have put up like scored a touchdown their first week ever, maybe something like that. Kind of like a random stat, but interesting one. Anything else really? I mean the Titans getting drummed was, I think, the most surprising thing.
Did not help me either.
The Cardinals are pretty good overall. You know, their defense, I still think, has some work to do, but, you know, they're getting there. And, you know, Kyler Murray just started his MVP case. Russell Wilson started a nice MVP case for himself as well. But yeah, it was just fun to have football back too. I mean, it's just the best. Like,
well,
there's nothing I love more than just being able to like go out and watch football or just lay in bed and watch football all day on Red Zone or just go chill in the living room, watch it with my dad. Like, it's just the best. It's just the best.
Absolutely. Well, that's what I was going to say. You said that the Titans getting drummed was maybe the most surprising thing. I was going to say what was more surprising, the Texans coming out and putting up 37 on Jacksonville, that Titans game, or Green Bay just absolutely laying an egg to Winston and the Saints. That to me was, I think, the most surprising thing, because I thought to some extent – Rodgers and Devontae Adams kind of we're going to go out on kind of the last two rod type of thing. And then Rodgers, from a lot of people's, especially Stephen A. Smith's standpoint, looked like he didn't even want to be there. I saw there were not like major names in sports, but there were some people that thought maybe Rodgers may have been kind of dropping the middle finger to the Packers, saying that, like, I'm just going to go out here and go through the motions, which maybe that might be something to keep an eye on. As the season goes on, they are playing the Lions. I saw a lot of people say, you know, if a performance like this comes out against the Lions, then maybe Aaron Rodgers is up to something nefarious behind the scenes. But, yeah, I was a little surprised by that. I mean, it's not like Jameis Winston had a tremendous day. He only threw, what, like 14 passes or something? So, like, did have five touchdowns, though. So that was I saw a lot of people saying that, you know, Jameis Winston's back, which I might pump the brakes on that just for a second. Like, let's give him a couple more weeks. Yeah, but I mean, the Texans thing was big for me too. We kind of predicted both of them and the Lions to maybe finish the year winless. I think both of us may have given them one win on our schedule predictions, but a little surprising there. Trevor Lawrence, of course, loses his first game, I think, ever in the regular season. I thought I saw that stat. Correct me if I'm wrong. High school, college, and whatever. Yes. Yeah, with that, it's insane. But welcome to the NFL. Things can change very quickly.
That's for certain. I think that's going to wrap it up for football. And pretty much the show. Not a whole lot to talk about Red Sox-wise. I mean, they're playing again tonight. They're a game – or, like, just out on the outside looking at the wild card right now. But that can change.
Clinging to life.
Yeah, they're clinging to life. Schwarbo, my guy, last night. Finally, I don't know if I brought this up on the show, but my Schwarbo shirt was supposed to get here, ordered on August 6th, October 22nd, but I got it, like, 3 days ago because I called them, but they said, oh, it's, you know, there's nothing we can do. Like, we're out of stock on that size right now. But they got me one. I guess I gave them a kick in the pants. And they upped the ante a little. But the Red Sox play against the Mariners again tonight. Maybe Schwarber has some more heroics in him if he needs them tonight. But we'll see. Just a quick Bruins note, because it's not with the Bruins themselves, besides, you know, rookie camp starting today and Fabian Lysell, first-round pick of the Bruins, getting his first, you know, getting his first look in a Bruins jersey on the ice in Brighton at Warrior Ice Arena, wearing number 68, Jaromir Jagr's old number. Pretty funny to see. But, yeah, Fabian Lysell, that's pretty exciting to see him out there. But just a note at the AHL level for the Bruins, it looks like John Ferguson Jr. With the Providence Bruins will be leaving to accept a position with the Arizona Coyotes. So more movement going on. Of course, they lost Jay Leach. They have a new coach. Another one with John Ferguson Jr., joining the Coyotes as an assistant GM. The first person I saw this report from was a good friend of mine, Mark Allred. He's been on this for like a couple weeks now, and he said he expects to hear an announcement later in the week officially from the Coyotes. So a lot going on with them with all the trades they're making and taking on bad contracts and draft picks. Now they got a new assistant GM, and the Bruins will have to make another lateral move at the AHL level. Figure I'd bring that up because it's just kind of coming out now. But credit to Mark with the scoop there. He's been on that for a little while now. It's being, you know, followed up on and confirmed by various other people on Twitter and stuff. So just some quick Bruins news at the end of the show I figured to throw out there because, you know, just popping up recently.
I did see one Celtics thing really quick.
Are you talking about the Kyrie thing?
No. Oh, I didn't even know about a Kyrie thing.
Kyrie Irving is apparently saying if the Nets were to trade him, he'll just retire.
Good. Trade him, please.
Yeah, just do it.
Get him out of here.
I don't want to see him anymore.
No, the one Celtics thing I was going to say is because we talked a little bit about it, I think, last week when it came out, the Juancho Hernan Gomez trade, for anyone that was sitting on pins and needles, that became official 3 hours ago. So.
Yep. Oh, actually, with the Bruins thing, just real quick, they actually just made it official. Not later in the week. They made it official 5 minutes ago. Thank you to Scott McLaughlin, too, for pointing this out. Just the position. I forgot the exact position he was. He was the executive director of player personnel for the Bruins themselves and the GM of the Providence Bruins at the same time. So it's actually a loss at both levels. We'll see what the Bruins do make some replacements. Maybe Jamie Langenbrunner gets a promotion or something. But then they have to make a move at GM of the Providence Bruins. So a lot going on in the front office for the Bruins this part of the offseason a little earlier. And the coaching staffs, but we'll see what happens with this next one. Speaking of them, I mean, rookie camp today, they had some captain's practices, got to see Nick Foligno and Derek Forbert and Eric Howell, the new guys on the ice, Linus Allmark and Nett. And the Bruins, I mean, we're like 11 days away, I think, from our first Bruins game in a few months, so that's exciting. We'll have some preseason notes to talk about some rookies, maybe some rookies that might sneak out of the roster. We'll see. But we'll have some Bruins more so in the future, definitely when the preseason starts. But if anything happens in between now and then, we'll let you know. But like I said, it's going to wrap it up for the show today. All Patriots, largely, besides a few notes at the end. Thank you for listening. Episode 61 of the books. You can follow us on TikTok If you throw Salvager and Credit into the search bar, you'll be able to find us no problem. We're just hovering around that 900 follower mark for a little while now. We got to get on the road to 1,000. You can follow me on Twitter at @Mike_Crady. You can follow Ryan at @Ryan_Salvaggio. And you can follow the show at @SalAndCradyPod on Twitter. Plenty of ways to listen. You're, of course, listening if you're hearing this right now on one of these platforms. We got Anchor FM, Apple Podcasts. You know, you listen there, you want to leave a review, go ahead. Spotify, Google Podcasts, and many other platforms. If those have any interest to you, go and check those out. And, yeah, until next time, episode 62, stay safe, stay healthy. Be nice to people, and we'll talk to you then. Peace out.